This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices, united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
What is going on? Oh, this is going to be a good podcast, guys. I'm excited. I'm pumped. Like I had Pixie Sticks and Mountain Dew kind of pumped up. Let the music play. Briefly, live for the hearts of men, just breathe. Speak, be heard for yours and just leave. Gotta break codes of silence, hear the law straight from violence. No more bully sirens, we want alliance. Common sense, need a plumbing. Sick of all separation, rise up from hatred. Black, white, unite the nation. Amazing, so damn amazing. We live for days of no crime. True. We need more scholars, deep minds. Less drug dealing, more leaders shining. Plus more father figures, less time in. It's so real, it's cold here. No fleece for comfort, it's so weird. Let music bring back the soul. And let's hear the chorus play. All right. You can put your hands down. I know some of you guys were waving your hands in the air like you just don't care. I know some of you guys were feeling that crown and the MOB Love My People song. You know, but you know when you hear that song, you know what it means. No, it doesn't mean that I'm getting sued for copyright infringements. It means that it is time for one of your favorite podcasts that is out there, your Drunk Uncle Sports Podcast, and I am your host. Yo, Drunk Uncle, Anwar Richardson. Welcome back. I appreciate you guys listening. Listen, I know you guys have tons of options, tons of choices of things that you can do, podcasts you can listen to, Netflix specials, Facebook, Instagram, Snapchat, whatever's out there that the young people on that I don't know anything about. I know you guys got a ton of things that you can be doing. So the fact that you're tuning in and listening to me, all I want to tell you is thank you. I appreciate it. I don't take it lightly. And so from the bottom of my heart, I can't pay you per se, but I can thank you. So thank you. I appreciate everything that you guys have done to make this into one of the more popular podcasts on the Yak Network. And I am super excited about this podcast that I have today. Now, normally, for people who have listened to me before, for 60-something episodes in, you guys know some of the normal fun stuff that I do, silly stuff that I do with the personal stories, talking about the Shih Tzu and the guinea pigs, and give you your pimp game one-on-one advice and all that type of stuff. And then we get into some sports eventually at some point. But this one, we got to go into a different direction because I think this one is going to be an important one because we talk so much about the student-athlete. And we always have the student-athlete, but yet we never really talk about the student portion of the athlete. Like, we don't know what the team GPA is. No one knows what that is. But we give you the stats from last year. You know about the wins and the losses. You know about a lot of the statistics. And we can go down the line. We can go third down conversions and fourth down conversions and red zone offense, red zone defense. But yet, we don't always get into the stories that really shape this college football team that you watch day in and day out. And I had the opportunity to speak to a young man by the name of Chase Moore on Monday. It's interesting. I got a text message from Dr. Darren Kelly over at UT telling me, hey, there's going to be a signing in Dr. Leonard Moore's office for Chase Moore as he chooses what grad school he's going to go to. And I thought to myself, what a unique concept this is, because I've never heard of a person having a signing day ceremony for grad school. I mean, just think about it. When have we heard about a signing day ceremony for grad school? And here's the thing. He was accepted into all these grad schools. He was accepted into Texas. He was accepted into UConn, accepted into Maryland. And he's going to have the opportunity to choose it. But guys, what I'm going to share with you goes a little bit beyond just, well, this young man has been able to go to grad school. He has a story to tell that I just believe everyone needs to hear. He has a story that I think is so amazing for what he's been able to accomplish from a young kid, inner city of Compton, to get to where he is today. I think I want to challenge you, for those who say, hey, it's about the student athletes and this is student athletes, I want to challenge you guys to hear what this young man has to say. I don't want to give you too many spoilers, but you're talking about a young man who not only had to overcome what's happened in the inner city, overcome a father who is serving a lifetime prison sentence for murder. Think about all these things. And yet here he was on Monday choosing what grad school he's going to go to. I want you to hear this story of Chase Moore. I want you to hear this interview. And I have one request of you. And you guys know I don't ask for a lot. And I really don't ask for stuff. You know, guys know me. I probably don't do a good enough job, quite honestly, of promoting the show because I'm not a self-promoter. I just let things kind of grow organically. But I do have a request for you. After you listen to it, after you hear it, do me a favor. Share it with someone. This is going to be a free podcast. It's a free podcast, so you don't have to worry about, hey, it's behind a paywall, and how do you have to explain these type of things? I want you to share it. Share it with a teacher. Share it with a family member. Share it with a friend. Share it with someone that needs encouragement. Share it with someone that needs motivation. Share it on your Facebook page. Wherever you feel comfortable sharing it, but do me a favor, is share it at least one time with someone. Because this, when you hear it and you're able to really get into it, you're going to say to yourself, this is a story that someone can benefit from, that someone can hear, whether in a hospital room, whether a young child, whether they're going through battles or struggles or battling depression or whatever the case may be. Sometimes, you know, we always talk about you overcome by your testimony, right? And so by hearing someone's testimony, it can help someone else. So that's my request of you. Shout outs to the people who've helped me do this. Shout out to Dr. Leonard Moore. Shout out to Dr. Ryan Sutton. Obviously, shout out to Darren Kelly. Those men over there do a fantastic job at UT. But ladies and gentlemen, please get ready and please engage and just stop what you're doing and listen to my interview with Chase Moore. And welcome back to your Drunk Uncle Sports Podcast. You guys know I am your Drunk Uncle, Anwar Richardson. Going in a little bit of a different route today. You know, normally we're supposed to get into UT football. We're going to get into a little bit of that. But I want to talk to someone that I've got with me that I want to introduce the world to Chase Moore. And you're going to say, who the heck is Chase Moore, Anwar? And I want Chase Moore. First of all, how you doing, Chase?
Man, I'm doing good. A pleasure to be here.
We are currently sitting in UT's office, and he just did something special. He signed a grad degree. And what's going to be your graduate degree in?
Educational policy and planning. I'm going to get my master's in that.
Okay. See, he's much smarter than all of us. But Chase has got a really interesting story to tell, because I think sometimes we just get so caught up in the X's and O's, and we get so caught up in the football and everything like that. And it's interesting, Chase, because it's supposed to be about the students. It's supposed to be about the academic life. Yet we never talk about it. We never talk about the academic life. We always talk about the other things. So let's start from here. Let's go back a little bit. You originally didn't sign with Texas. You what school were you originally at?
I originally signed at the College of Holy Cross. It's a D1 in Massachusetts.
Okay.
Really elite academic institution.
Okay. And what got you there, and what got you to that point?
That's a good question. I went to a Catholic high school. I'm originally from Los Angeles, as it was stated. And we just had really good relationships. We had a lot of teachers that actually went to that college. And it just fit right in. I went to a Jesuit high school, Jesuit college. They recruited me coming out of high school. So it was just peaches and cream. Decided I was going to go there.
And you had success there, correct? If I'm looking at, let me pull back up your bio. It looked like you were doing pretty good over there, right? You played there in 2015. You've led the league in at least this team in tackles. While I'm looking here. Lettered in baseball, track and field. So you were doing a thing over there. Why did you leave?
I left because I didn't want to have any regrets in life. I had this crazy dream one day where I was holding my grandchild in my lap. And then I was telling her to live her dreams, to go for anything you want in life and to strive. But then in retrospect, in the dream, as I woke up, I realized that I was contradicting myself mm-hmm. because I was telling her to chase her dreams, but I wasn't chasing mine. Mm-hmm. So from there, I decided that I want to really chase my dream and do what I feel like I've been called to do. Ever since I was 8 years old, originally being from L.A., you're a big University of Southern California fan. Mm-hmm. And at that time, USC was the best team in the nation. They're playing in the Rose Bowl against this other team. And they're losing.
this other team.
Yeah. Uh-huh. They had orange cows in their helmets, mm-hmm. white helmets, and some weird type of orange that I've never seen with white pants on. Uh-huh. And by the conclusion of the game, they won. And from then on, my 8-year-old mind told me that's the best team in the world to go to. So I shifted my perspective, and I said, wow, one day I'm going to play football there. So it's just been a constant chase towards making that dream become a reality.
Okay. And so you decided to leave there. And you came here in 2017 is when you first got here?
Yeah, 2017.
Okay, so that was Tom Herman's first year, correct?
Yeah, Tom Herman's first year.
Okay, and then how did that whole process of you just coming here, do you just basically just packed up your bags, moved to Beverly? I mean, how did that go?
It was a crazy process.
Okay.
I went on at this previous school, and I was playing, got a little bit of time as a freshman. I was actually starting by the spring ball portion of it, so I was doing really well. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But then I decided that there might be a little bit more for me. So I decided to transfer. And from then on, I had to sit out of football the next year. So I became a student athlete to just being a regular student at the school. And it was pretty hard because I would have a lot of old teammates, a lot of old friends. And since I wasn't playing football, they didn't see me in the same way anymore. Mm-hmm. So they saw me as Chase, just Chase, instead of mm-hmm. Chase. Oh, you're going to be the star. You can be this. You can be that. So I had to accept my identity of just being a regular student for a little bit. But I sat out so that when I transferred to my school, I wouldn't have to sit out then.
Sure,
due to NCAA rules.
Gotcha.
So I figured take the small sacrifice now at this school so that when I go to this other school, I'll have a bigger opportunity and not sit out.
When you were sitting out, does that transition into the bigger thing and the bigger picture, which I really want to talk to you about, which is the volunteering, the outreach, those type of things that you do within the Austin community? Is that when you started transitioning into some of that, or had you been doing that prior to that? Because some people, what leading up to clearly is you getting that All-State Good Works Team Award, mm-hmm. Which we'll get into a little bit later. But I just want to know where the genesis is, because what you're really known for is a guy who does that type of outreach.
Yeah. And you, around the locker room, that's what I'm known as.
And to the point where you got a national award for it. So explain to me how it began.
Yeah, the genesis, man, I'm actually going to say high school.
Okay.
I came into high school as a freshman, and one of the teachers identified me as a leader. Mm-hmm. So they told me, and they knew I had a story, a dynamic life story. So he influenced me to go to middle schools and to inspire them and convince them to go to my high school so they could kind of become like me. And he did it in such a way where you say who you were, who mm-hmm. you are, and where you're going, and where you plan to be.
Okay.
So the genesis of that just started from high school, and now it carries on to me going to other inner-city schools throughout Austin, throughout Dallas, throughout San Antonio, just a bunch of different places.
Just on your own?
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not saying you're just showing up like a crazy person, you know, saying, hey, I want to talk to the kids.
Yeah.
I'm assuming, but this is not...
Yeah, there's a particular structure with
it. Yeah, correct,
which I can get into.
Correct, but it's not a UT per se thing that you're going through. A lot of this is on your own, correct?
Yeah. Not much with UT,
mm-hmm.
But it's, again, still a benefit to play football, because
sure.
that's going to make my message a little bit more poignant
mm-hmm.
if I'm wearing the football jersey, or if they see the orange shirt, then it validates, wow. Not only is this kid coming here, but he's saying, I can do it too.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of really resonates with these young children, letting them know they can reach their point of success.
What is your message? Because there's people out there, and we're talking about the message, and it's kind of probably sounding a little vague.
Yeah.
So what is the message? What are you trying to communicate? What are you trying to get across? What's the goal?
Yeah, I rarely mention my narrative. Mm-hmm. But for the sake of this, I'll do it.
Okay.
I say how I grew up in an inner city area in Los Angeles. Didn't have
What area?
Compton, to be specific.
Okay.
Yeah, the Compton area in mm-hmm. LA. My father is currently incarcerated in mm-hmm. prison for life for murder. Sometimes I would have no water at home. So just, you know, a lot of troubling circumstances.
Mm-hmm.
But I would highlight that my environment did not shape my reality.
Mm-hmm.
My audacity to dream great dreams mm-hmm. is what shaped my reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I also speak upon not only just to dream, but to dream dreams that are so big that they have the potential to shape and transform their realities. Mm. And then when I do that, they think, wow, although I hear gunshots at nighttime, although I miss meals, although my dad is into my life, he made it so I can make it too. So it really resonates with them. And I've been able to do that in a number of different places, in a number of different cities, even different continents.
So let's go back to that because, you know, somebody may listen to this, and I know you typically have your platform, but for this platform, somebody might be hearing this, and maybe they want to share this with someone else. Give us a little bit more of the detail of what you were talking about as far as your father, as far as the upbringing, what you feel comfortable of sharing. Take us back, you know, to what age you were, and just kind of give us an understanding of where you come from.
Okay. I grew up in what an individual would actually consider the suburbs. Like a nice...
The suburbs of Compton?
No.
Okay.
The suburbs of an area called Moreno Valley.
Okay, yes.
And just by hearing that name, you can imagine...
It sounds good. Nice. It sounds Fresh Prince of Bel-Air-like.
We can go with that route. However, our neighbors were white. Mm-hmm. Like, just all white neighbors. We were the only black family. It was like a seven-bedroom home, a bunch of different cars, a bunch of toys, different vehicles. Like, it was just... We were considered the Huxtables, lack of better terms. Mm-hmm. But then it got to the point that my mom was experiencing some domestic violence. Mm. So she decided that she's going to leave that comfortable lifestyle and she's going to move to an area where her children can be safe. Because my dad, he just was involved in a lot of traumatic experiences for my mom. Mm-hmm. So in the middle of the night when my father was gone, at a casino or something like that one weekend, my mom packed up all of our bags, all of our clothes. And when I say all of them, I'm talking about myself and my two siblings, my brother and sister. And then we moved into where my grandmother lives. And she lives in the Compton area of Los Angeles, California.
So it has to be bad when you said she had to move into a safer area and you moved to Compton.
Yeah.
I mean, no one says I want to go safe and go to Compton.
Yeah.
So it had to be bad.
Indeed. And from there, my life changed. Mm-hmm. Ever since then, like I said, sometimes...
Because it's hard to go from... Because I've experienced this before. It's hard to go from middle class down to poor because you know the difference.
Yeah.
If you were raised poor, you know, that you're just poor. Mm-hmm. When you know the difference, it has to be a shock.
Certainly. And it was. But mainly for me, since I was so young, it just was what it was. Because I couldn't really compare it to anything different. Mm-hmm. My older siblings, they perhaps could a little bit. But I was 3 years old. When the shift happened, I just knew it was regular life.
Okay, gotcha. And then during that time span, he gets incarcerated?
He was incarcerated, I want to fast forward to when I was 12 years old.
Okay, so that had to be even worse for you.
Oh, Lord, traumatic.
Yes.
Traumatic experience. I found out because he committed a murder at about 1:30 in the morning, and then it was all over the news. I'm talking Fox News, ABC, CNBC, like just everywhere. And then I was watching a movie with my mom, and then out of nowhere we hear a loud helicopter hovering over our house. And at the time we thought it was the movie, but it ended up not being the movie because the volume got louder and louder until we heard on the megaphone, "May the residents of," they said our address, "come out one by one with your hands up." And when they did that, my mom came out and my sister came out and I did as well. And there was the house was surrounded by like 50 different weapons, shotguns, pistols, automatic rifles, the whole nine yards. Really traumatic experience. And then they all put us into the police car, and we were just flustered. Like I said, we saw our dad on TV, but what happened is the police thought we were harboring our father at our house. So that's why they had to do that crazy whole little thing. But then from there, my narrative, it was just bad.
Yeah.
Like because my dad was incarcerated, and a man's goal is to be as much like his father as possible. Mm-hmm. I had no father figure at the time, and he got caught up in some negative situations. So I tried to carry some of those things on during school. But by the grace of God, I got accepted to this really good high school, and then my narrative shifted for the better.
So that was kind of the defining moment because, you know, for a lot of kids, they get resentful. You know, become bitter, angry. I mean, you definitely, the door was open for you to go down a different path.
Oh, certainly.
Go down a different road. Why do you think you did it?
I didn't because I knew that although, you know, life is hard and it's crazy, there might be some more. Because I've seen as bad as it could get, at least in the U.S. I've seen the no hot water, I've seen the gunshots at nighttime. I've seen the drug abuse and the drug violence. So if I could just apply what I already have with academics, then something better than all the craziness in my environment is bound to happen. Mm-hmm. So I just have faith that my success will materialize once I just be a little bit different than my community.
How old was your brother? Because Kalen, is that his name?
It's pronounced Kylan.
Kylan, all right. So I'm one of the many people who mispronounced it. People may not know, your brother is a Rhodes Scholar.
Yes.
He went to TCU. Yep. He's a Rhodes Scholar. So clearly he's been smart his entire life. Talk about him, what he's been able to achieve in that dynamic also.
Yeah, he's led by example. Mm-hmm. I wasn't the type of person to be afraid of living in my brother's shoes. Mm-hmm. I embraced them. I put my feet right into his. Mm-hmm. If my brother's doing it, I'm doing it. Because it was taking us in a further direction, a more positive direction, away from our community. My brother, this dude used to get up at 4:30 every single morning throughout high school. And then he would do just push-ups and just so many different sacrifices. Mm-hmm. And he would never get tired. And when my father went to prison, he knew he had to be strong for me. Because he was the man of the house.
Sure. So how old was he around that time? Because you said you're about
12. If I was about 12, he was about 15.
Okay. Good.
Yeah, I want to say he was like 15. But he had to be strong during that entire period. So, man, he's my biggest inspiration. Mm-hmm. Or rather, mm-hmm. one of. Mm-hmm. I'll also give credit to my mom. But he's just been a phenomenal figure. I guess you could also say a father figure in a big sense. Because he's filled the shoes and fulfilled the void. He's the very individual that taught me how to read. How to ride a bike. How to tie my shoes, mm-hmm. how to talk to a girl, talk like a man. Just mm-hmm. literally everything. Mm-hmm. Anything I know, brother.
Wow, wow. And so, is he still in the program right now as far as...
Yeah, he's still at the University of Oxford. Okay. He's getting his degree in Latin American Studies. Mm. And I'll just highlight this real quick. That entire program is taught in Spanish.
Wow.
So you already know what that means.
Wow. It means I can't qualify. Now, you might be able to, but it definitely means that I and most of my listeners would be have to tap out, you know, at that point. And so it's just an amazing story. But so you've been here now, and you've been doing a lot of volunteer work.
Oh, certainly.
Where are the places that you've gone into? You said you go into, do you go to schools, churches? Mm-hmm. Where do you speak at?
Yeah, it all started... the summer of 2017, for football, we have Kevin Washington, the director of player development. He's been a great support system, a great mentor, and he's kind of helped lead the way for me in terms of like kind of helping me have identity off the field. Mm-hmm. So he helped get me a job at the Boys and Girls Club here in Austin, and I worked at that job. And then I started to realize that these are some low-income students. Some of them may not read the best. Some of them might not be coming from the best environments. And I know how to read. I'm from a better environment now. I'm a college student. So how about I try to highlight some positive things that I've learned throughout my experience? So I began to read to them, to mentor them. And then from there, I guess you would call it like motivational speeches that I would give to them. Mm-hmm. Then from there, I contacted actually... that very friend that's sitting right there on the ground, Kalen McGuire.
Yeah.
And I told him that I play football here. You're an art student here. We need to find a way to use our platform. So we got the crazy idea, along with my other good friend, Keelan Wilson, to create something called UT Spark.
Okay, and UT Spark. Okay.
It stands for Strong Players Are Reaching Kids. Mm. And both of them don't play football, mm-hmm. and I do, but just the player of life aspect of it. And it kind of challenges people that do have platforms to actually utilize it to uplift. So our biggest thing that we do, our mission statement, is to breathe life into a dying situation and to bring hope into hopeless situations. Mm. So like I said, we've spoken at the Boys and Girls Club, different elementary schools, middle schools, high schools, and even spoke at a women's detention center one time.
Mm.
And also... we realized that it's all good to make this impact out of campus. Mm-hmm. But what good is it to do that if you're a student here and not doing it here? So then we got the crazy idea to make a sorority speaking tour. So we contacted many of the sororities around campus, and they were all very loving and supportive of us coming to their sorority chapter meetings and just speaking a little bit on our lives.
Sure.
And it was very empowering and kind of, you know, helped cultivate a nice relationship.
What's the general feedback that you normally get when you go into, whether it's the schools or maybe it's the sororities? What are people usually, you probably know exactly what someone's going to come and say and talk to you about. What's the general feedback you're getting?
The general feedback is, wow, I never would have imagined it. Mm-hmm. I see you around campus all the time, and I think you're just like any other football player. But then when they hear me speak, they realize, wow, everyone has a story. Mm-hmm. I don't care if you're the biggest, the fastest, the top recruit, or the no recruit in my case. Like, everyone has a story, so it kind of just acknowledges the fact that people are more than athletes. People are more than whatever society projects them to be.
Hmm, okay. You took a trip to Cape Town.
Yes, sir.
Explain to me how that came about, what you were doing over there. That was this last summer?
Summer 2018.
Okay, give me the Cape Town experience.
Man.
Who'd you go with? You know, don't leave out any names because I won't get in trouble. Who'd you go with? Part of UT, what happened?
Yeah, you're actually currently in the office of the people that allowed me to go. Mm-hmm. Dr. Moore, the vice president.
Leonard Moore, for those at home.
Indeed. And then Darren Kelly, whose office we're currently in right now, they work and they lead an initiative to help a lot of other students study abroad. We did an urban economic development course where 85 students that attend UT, predominantly black, went to the continent of Africa. And that is so monumental because many of them are low-income students where college wasn't always the dream for them. But, you know, just due to redefining the narrative of people that look like us, being able to travel abroad speaks a lot of volumes. So we got down to Cape Town. First thing I did was get a little emotional because I became the first person in general in my family to go to the continent of Africa. Mm-hmm. Such a powerful thing. And then from there, we had a class at the number one most prestigious university in the continent of Africa called the University of Cape Town. Mm-hmm. We went there. We had class twice a week on Tuesdays and also on Thursdays. Class was like 3 hours long. And on the days that you didn't have class, you went to your internship. I worked at Bethel Women's Project. And it's an inner city Cape Town, a low income primarily serving community as well, where I can't necessarily give one term to describe what I did. Because I did so many different things. We passed out chicken noodle soup to the homeless. Mm-hmm. We cleaned up the beach. We spoke at different high schools and secondary schools in that area. Just anything and everything. And we're also able to learn a lot about the culture. Mm-hmm. Sometimes when people go and they'll travel to new areas, they just do tourist type stuff.
Sure.
But we're on the front lines, like getting true service and true work done. And many of the individuals, like, let us know of their culture, their different languages, and how appreciative they were that although we're African Americans, that you're still a part of the diaspora as well. So they're accepting us back as Africans. A lot of times they were saying, welcome home. And, you know, we got to go to the beach. Mm-hmm. We got to go to this thing called Lion's Head Mountain, which is a huge mountain that we got to climb up. We got to go to the prison that Nelson Mandela was incarcerated at for 27 years and 6 months. Just so many different things.
And how old are you right now?
I am currently 22.
22. Okay. This is a lot of experiences in 22 years indeed. Of life.
It is.
So you said Nelson Mandela. I interrupted you, but Nelson Mandela. What is the number of other things? I mean, that's a lot there. I mean,
yeah. At the age of 21, I got to pet a live cheetah. That was also a really big deal. We went to this this cheetah outreach place where they find cheetahs and they like get them healthy again. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I was petting a real cheetah.
Wow!
Like it was so powerful, and the scenery was beautiful. Mm-hmm. It could make a grown man cry easily. Because just comparing what I've been through, like the rough experiences in Compton or South Central, if I want to make this juxtaposition, I came from South Central to walk on the shores of South Africa, like that truly speaks volumes. Mm-hmm, but just in doing that, I know anything is possible. So going to Cape Town, South Africa, affirmed that, and it gave me the thirst to get other young men and young women from inner city areas to study abroad or to go abroad and just see beyond their circumstances.
You won the All-State Good Works Team Award last year. It was presented to you the week during the Sugar Bowl, if I'm correct.
Yeah, actually at the Sugar Bowl.
At the Sugar Bowl.
During halftime. So I was wearing my uniform, and I had to run out there the opposite way of the team to go in the locker room and accept it right in the center stage.
Wow, okay. Explain the award to people and give us a feeling of what that actually means to you to have earned that award.
Okay. First and foremost, I don't do what I do for the recognition or the awards. But winning that, it just does something to you.
Because Tim Tebow's won this award.
Yeah, so. And he's actually one of the individuals I got to meet as well. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I won this huge award where only 22 student athletes in the entire U.S. won the award and 11 FBS. Mm-hmm. And since Texas is FBS, I had a really, really slim chance of winning. And some of these other individuals, just to give context, Tim Tebow, Trey Watson, Deshaun Watson.
Okay.
There we go. And who else? Just a lot of individuals. I'll put it like that. Mm-hmm. And they, you know, Heisman candidate caliber individuals. And then little old me, who hasn't won any type of Heisman or anything near it. But if I'm on the same pedestal as them for doing community engagement, then I know I'm in the right direction. So it's a really selective award to win. But just by doing what I do in terms of being in the community and in the classroom, it was given to me. Like, it was supposed to happen, I guess you could say. And it got presented to me after practice one day. I was just a regular day, and then Kevin Washington, our director for player development, came out, and he told me to speak to some inner-city elementary school kids. And I do that on a regular basis. So I went on to do it, and then out of nowhere, some lady I've never seen before comes out and she says, "Hello, everyone. My name is so-and-so, and I want to award Chase Moore to get the 2018 All-State Good Works Team Award." And when she said that, I sprinted to it, really ecstatic. But then we got the official award again at halftime, where we got the honor during the game and other people like congratulating us all throughout the Sugar Bowl. And, you know, you're on the Jumbotron and all these other cool things. But it's just a monumental award, but I guess you could also say another milestone towards this journey of impact I'm trying to have.
What does your mom say to all this and the success you've been able to achieve?
She expects it and nothing less. My brother actually won the exact same award when he played football at TCU. So
no pressure.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But yeah, I'm supposed to win this. And especially in terms of like graduate school, she's proud of me, yes, but is she surprised? Absolutely not. Why? Because she currently has a Juris Doctor degree. She went to law school. So the standard growing up wasn't what college you want to go to. It was which graduate school do you want to go to or which law school do you want to go to. So the standard of academic excellence has always been there. But she is so proud of me. But it's just, I just got to keep on going, essentially.
Have you maintained, a couple more questions, have you maintained a relationship with your father at all? Not so much. I didn't know if you knew about your success, what you've been able to accomplish. Or
I'm going to say it's a little bit more challenging than I would like. If I was in California, say I went to like UCLA or something, I would be able to drive those 3 hours to go see him.
Sure.
He's in Tehachapi, California, but that's far, far from here.
Especially as a college student.
Indeed.
It's very hard to do.
So we write each other every once in a while, but I would like to update him that I got into graduate school and I'll be attending UT.
Yeah, and tell me about that. So you had three choices. It was it was UT, it was UConn, and what was the other school?
Maryland.
And Maryland. Schools that you were accepted into, correct? Let's talk about your decision as far as you're going to stay at UT. Are you still going to play sports? Is that on the agenda? Just give me a little bit more of the process of what you're going to major in.
Yeah. I'll just start by saying I'm officially retired as of becoming a Sugar Bowl champion.
So you're going out on top.
Yeah, going out on top. Uh-huh. Now I'm just a nerd, just, you know, ready to research and just go ahead and get it. I got my degree. I'm going to get my master's in educational policy and planning. It really focuses on, my research focuses on urban education and just making it more equitable so other inner city kids like myself can go to college. Even if football is the route, I want to let them know that's not the only route. So I'll just be emphasizing that as well. And it really speaks volumes that I chose to come here to UT and everything like that. but I decided to go here for graduate school. I transferred here, so I've only been here for about 2.5 years. So I feel there's a little bit more gas left in the tank, a little bit more food left on the plate. Mm-hmm. So I can continue to maximize on these opportunities and just continue to empower and uplift those around. But it was a good process, and I didn't get to really do this in high school. I had minimal football opportunities coming out of high school, although I was on full ride scholarship at my other school. But at this one, I figured I couldn't do it in high school, so let's do it now.
So you finally got to do, for those who weren't here, he actually had like a signing day ceremony where he actually had the hats on the table. Kind of had a giveaway because you had the UT jersey and the UT helmet on, so I kind of felt like we knew where he was going with this. But I was like, well, we'll just play along just in case. But he actually had a chance to do that. You've already made up your mind, but when you see all these people that came to support you, there was, you know, the room was probably at least 50 people or so that would seem like it was packed in there.
It was.
Seeing that love and support, what did that mean to you?
Man, it just feels good because sometimes if you don't have all the status or the on-the-field accomplishments, it could be easy to feel that no one necessarily sees what you're doing. But it kind of magnifies the fact that what I'm doing is very important, if not more. It just might not be on the football field with a football helmet on, but it's just as powerful. So it was wonderful to see all of my family, my friends, different professors I've had throughout the years. And I was actually surprised. I didn't expect that big of a turnout. How this whole thing materialized, I was meeting with Dr. Moore about a month ago. I went on this black men's retreat, this black man's men's retreat. And then Dr. Moore, he told me to sit next to him. And then he said this crazy idea. He's like, you know what, Chase? We're going to have a signing day for you for graduate school. And then I was like, wow, I've never heard of that idea before. But then he was saying how important it is for the young men and the young women that don't play professionally, what's going to be their chapter afterwards. So it kind of emphasizes that, and it calls to action that is just important. And just as, you know, it's important to go to the draft, it's just as important to get a graduate school opportunity.
I didn't give you any water, so you're good. Well, let's close it on this. You have definitely been through a lot, but you've been able to achieve a lot of success. You still got many years ahead of you and things, many more things to achieve. But no matter what, I think sitting here at 22 years old, you can still give people advice and you can still give words of wisdom and words of encouragement. So for anyone who's listening to this out there who is facing, you know, tough times, tough adversity, who's trying to find a better way and find a way to get through, what would be your message to them, whether it's the young person or the old person? What would you say?
I'll say two things. Tough times don't last. Tough people do. And the race is not won to the swift, but to he who endureth until the end. So we just got to keep on pushing.
All right, Chase. Thank you so much for coming on the podcast. It's been very great to have you. Guys, Chase Moore, you did not know who he was. You should know everything about him. And by the way, after listening to him, there can be no excuses for failure in life. All right, guys?
Indeed.
All right. Take care.
Yes, sir.